Thanks for listening to Psychedelic Parenting. If you like what you hear, please consider making a tax-deductible gift to our work through the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies or by using our Amazon link to buy the things you need. Welcome once again to the psychedelicparenting.org podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan. With me today is Natalie Grigson. Natalie is a young adult author who is launching a Kickstarter campaign that we just found out about the other day, and we're really, really excited to present it. The book that she is writing is called Just Call Me Is, and it is a storybook and a journal and a workbook aimed at kids, a bit around upper elementary to middle school age, those tween years. And it is designed to teach them about their higher self and about mindfulness. And I'm really excited to have her on. She gave us a test copy of the book. I gave it to my 10-year-old son, and he devoured it and is really, really enjoying it. So welcome so much to Psychedelic Parenting, Natalie.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm excellent. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I am a born and raised Austinite. I have been here my whole life pretty much, except for several years traveling. And I work here mostly as a fiction author. I've pretty much done very fiction-y fiction, very fantastical, whimsical stories so far. And this is my first foray into a more spiritual, mindful kind of book. All of my writing has been aimed at young adult and middle grade, and this is the one I'm the most excited about, I would say.
And tell us about one of the things as I'm looking at this is a book that's written from the viewpoint of the child's own higher self, of all of our higher selves. And I think that in the world of young adult writing, that's probably a pretty unique item. So can you tell us how your process of writing this book felt similar or different from the fiction writing that you normally do?
Yeah, it was certainly a lot more fun. It was very, very conversational because I got to address the reader or the kids as a part of them, as a part of myself and their self. And it was almost kind of meta writing it, because in the book I go over kind of this is an energy, this is a oneness that we all share, and your energy is this person's energy. And in writing it, I was like, wow, this is mine as well, and I'm talking to them from mine. And it was pretty cool. And it's all in this kind of very conversational and relatable voice. It is a very much like a fourth to seventh grade voice, so yes, that kids can relate to it.
Yeah, it definitely has its share of tasteful snark, which my son definitely appreciates.
Good. It works well for me, because I think my voice is my inner voice is a fourth to seventh grade voice anyway, so it was pretty easy.
Is that something you say would be common for people in your line of work who are writing fiction for young people, that they would say that their inner voice or their higher self has that quality of a young person?
I think probably so. I think that's why a lot of young adult and middle grade authors get into this age group. It's because we read YA and middle grade books, and we've never quite grown up. So
my younger sister is she has this YouTube channel and reviews books and stuff, and she's very, very fond of the young adult genre. And I passed this on to her. Hopefully she'll key in and see what you've got going on. That's pretty exciting.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. So what should parents expect from this book once it's completed?
Well, this is definitely something that I feel like has been a long time coming. And I'm almost kind of surprised that there's not something like this in the marketplace at this point. I've been looking and looking, which is actually the reason that I'm having to do a Kickstarter and publish it myself, is when I've published or pitched it to publishers, they've said, this is great, but there's nothing in the market like this, and there's no market for it.
So there's no shelf at Barnes & Noble to set it on, and so therefore they don't want to publish it. Is that what they're saying?
Exactly. And to me, I'm like, well, that should be good, but, you know, do the thing myself.
Right.
But it's an introduction to mindfulness, and there's a lot of meditation exercises and really practical and fun and engaging tools in the book. I think it's a good way for parents to introduce this to their kids and have something to talk about with their kids.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely agree with that. Just the experience that we've had in the last 24 hours or so since you sent us the review copy, I printed it off. I gave it to my son, and I went to a meeting that I had, and I came back a couple hours later, and he'd read the whole thing, and he was already starting to work through some of the workbook in the end. And I asked him, you know, what is it about? He said, I just thought it was great. And it's told from the perspective of this person called Iz. And I said, well, who's that? He said, well, it's my higher self and the higher self of the character that's in the book. And I said, well, what does that mean? He's like, well, it's the consciousness of the whole universe. And I thought that was great, because I immerse myself in metaphysics and in spirituality and in child rearing, but I've had a really hard time figuring out how to package these ideas or present them to my kids in a way that makes sense to them and that they can understand. Because sometimes these concepts can be pretty out there. And so I want to just commend you for what you're creating, because I think it's going to be something that will be really valuable to our family. I think it's going to be something that I'll find that I'll be giving away as a gift to people of like-minded people that I interact with. And, you know, if people can know that it's out there and that it's available, I think that you're going to do great with this.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm really glad to hear that, because it is it's an infinite. It's a huge thing to try and talk about with words, and that's all we've got. And I think, you know, my only approach is with a snarky middle grade voice, and it seems to be working.
So what do you think of this about this book that will appeal to kids?
Once it's done, it will have lots of illustrations. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly conversational. I mean, it's written in a journal. Like, the whole book looks like it's a journal that you found, you know, laying around somewhere, and you open it up. So it's kind
of like one of the like composition books or whatever.
Yeah, the cover looks like a composition book that's decorated. And so it's kind of got this secretive, like, inside look type of feel to it. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to throw in some Harry Potter references here.
Oh, just go for it.
It's a big influence in my life. But almost like the diary in the second book, where Tom Riddle writes to the characters, this book is kind of, it's addressed to the reader from their inner self. Mm-hmm. And it's written in a handwritten font, and it's just for them. And then the reader, the kids, can write back, because there's several journal exercises and blank pages for mm-hmm. them to add their own stuff. So it's really fun.
And what inspired you to start writing this?
Well, the long story is, I began my own meditation practice, and just kind of a crazy journey about 10 years ago. And it's led me all over the place, all over the board, all over the world, and through various spiritual books and spiritual teachings. And that's kind of all been building up over the years in my subconscious, like just kind of sitting there. And then one day, a couple of years ago, I woke up at about 5 in the morning, and the book, like this book, was just downloaded in my head. And I just got up and started writing, and didn't really know what I was even writing or where it was going. And then I think it was later that week I had a first draft, and it just kind of wrote itself. It was a weird thing, even for me, who, like, I don't plan my books usually, and this one was the least me, if that makes any sense.
It does. Yeah.
Happened.
Uh-huh. And, you know, I'm not terribly surprised to hear you describe the process in that manner. Because, you know, knowing other people who do writing and especially this kind of this, because that you have it in the language, in being addressed, that's like the higher self addressing the reader. It doesn't surprise me that it came to you in this sort of, you know, fully formed from the head of Zeus sort of quality. And I think that speaks to the genuineness of what you've given birth to, because, you know, if you had really labored at it and you were trying really hard to make it a certain way or use this voice and you weren't in touch with your own inner self, it wouldn't have the genuine quality that my son was obviously so attracted to. And, you know, kids that age are really good at spotting insincerity. So,
yeah, they are. I work with kids. I know. Yeah. And I was very aware, like when I would take breaks in writing, I was kind of marveling at like, wow, my inner self is writing this book from the inner self of this kid. It's so cool.
Yeah. This is psychedelic parenting. So we focus a lot on how psychedelic experiences that we have had as parents influence the way that we raise our kids and the way that we interact in the world with the people around us. So I'm interested in hearing whether you've had any psychedelic experiences and how they have influenced, if any, your own trajectory towards meditation and mindfulness and working with children.
Oh, definitely. I have had several psychedelic experiences. It's one of those things where I'm like, how do I talk about this? Because it's just been so impactful.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's definitely been something that's shaped who I am as a person, which means it shapes my creativity and even just what I do with my life. It's been really formative in the path that I've chosen, which is not especially traditional.
We're hip to that sort of thing around here. It's okay.
Yeah, cool. So I work with kids during the school year at an after-school nonprofit program, and I write, and that's pretty much what I do. That's how I make my living. Mm-hmm. And travel whenever I can. And I feel like psychedelics have definitely given me a sort of confidence and permission to do the weird stuff that I do. Whenever I go into a psychedelic journey, I set intentions and kind of ask the psychedelic, whatever it may be, to guide me in some way. And they've really helped guide me on this path that I'm on right now. And especially like about a month ago, I had a really powerful experience.
Mm-hmm.
And my intention was clarity, like just the word clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And but after that, things just started shifting. Like I didn't really start shifting anything, but I felt like my priorities were shifting a little bit. And mm-hmm. I just started doing different things and stopping different things. And one of the things that just kind of happened was this Kickstarter. It just kind of dropped into my lap. A friend suggested it and I said, okay. And it's the first time in a long time I've tried to do anything with this book, which is kind of, like I said, I wrote it about 2 years ago and it's been collecting virtual dust on my computer. And I feel pretty certain that just the clarity from that last experience was a big part of me deciding to put this out there and being really clear about, you know, what I want to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's excellent. So let's talk a little bit about the Kickstarter. So it sounds like it's been it was a pretty recent inspiration to launch this. So why don't you tell our listeners how much money you're looking to raise and what you will do with the funds when you hit your goal?
Sure. I am looking to raise $10,000, which I hear for a Kickstarter is on the low end, but
yeah.
I don't feel like I need a terrible amount of money because I will be self-publishing this book. The money really, like the big stuff is the marketing and the design, making sure this book looks like it needs to, because it really needs to look like a journal. It needs to be illustrated, needs to look good. And also the money will be going to the people that decide to back this thing. So if you back it, you get a book basically, or several books. Yeah, marketing and backing and just getting it out there is really one of the main reasons I'm doing the Kickstarter, getting eyes on it.
And why don't you tell us about the perks that you're offering to people if they help contribute to the creation of this book?
I will pull up the exact page.
Okay.
Kickstarter is so new to me.
I haven't done a Kickstarter before. I've used GoFundMe before, and I've also done an Indiegogo campaign, but not Kickstarter.
Yeah, apparently it's a big hoopla.
It is.
It's a lot of work.
It is, yeah. And the biggest thing is, the biggest mistake that people make in this crowdfunding thing is that you have to realize that it's going to be a full-time job promoting the fundraising while you're doing it. Yeah, so, you know, making sure that you're getting the word out to people that care about this and can share it on social media, because, you know, you can spend money on a Facebook ad, for example, but that's not going to get you anywhere near the kind of magnetism that, say, just, you know, having a few people that know key folks that can, you know, get the message out and make those kind of, it's just like, it's an amazing act of trust and of connection building. So, you know, if you really engage us, you're going to find at the end that you have all these new friends that are really excited about what you're doing and want to make sure that's successful for you. So.
Yeah. And that's the cool thing about this is that the people that are going to support this are the people that really see the value in it. And that's a cool little community to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's talk stuff for people. So most of the lower pledges get books, copies of books, lots of books. And I have a deal going where you get a hugely discounted rate if you order 20 books. And this is meant primarily for bookstores and booksellers and like meditation centers and, you know, whoever would like to buy 20 books.
Or me.
Or you. It's I made it for you.
Yeah. Well, I just saw that. I'm like, oh, this will be great. You know, this will be an amazingly cool thing to have at like our tables at conferences and stuff. So.
Yeah, definitely. I'm also doing typewritten poems, which I think needs some explaining. I'm in a group in Austin, and I guess we're based in Austin, and now it's become kind of a global thing. It's called Typewriter Rodeo, and we are a group of poets, and we get hired by events to just set up with our beautiful vintage typewriters and type poems on the spot, just improvise poems about whatever the person requests. So I'm giving away some typewriter rodeo.
Like impromptu.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because I do improv as well. So it's been a really fun blend of poetry and improv. I love it.
We should let people know that one of the really interesting things about this book is that I assume that you've handwritten the entire book, or else it has the appearance that you've handwritten it.
Yes, it has the appearance of being handwritten. And then it will be illustrated by me throughout.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, it's I think that's part of what's really cool about that. The font is a part of what makes it really interesting and what I think draws. That's one of the things that my son mentioned that he thought was really cool. Like he said, "Oh, it looks like it's you know that a kid just wrote this or something."
Yeah.
It's a kid with better handwriting than him, but
slightly. It's still a little messy. Yeah.
So I was trying to think of what would be the best way to sort of encapsulate what this book is for people. And I think that it's from my perspective, it's sort of a kid version of, say, The Alchemist, where it's like a parable for kids that is specifically designed to teach them these important metaphysical concepts. And it sucks. The story sucks them in. It's, you know, about the struggles of any kid their age. You know, the parents of the kids split up, and mm-hmm. she has to make new friends in a new city, in a new country. And, mm-hmm. You know, that's the making friends and, you know, being liked and being likable is a pretty huge thing for kids at that age. So it through that, it sort of takes them deeper into themselves and outside of, and teaches them to like look at their own thinking and to watch their emotions, which is great.
Yeah.
So I think that this would be a really good tool, you know, for a parent who wanted something for a kid to do as like a sort of, you know, a summer project to keep their mind busy. I think this would be a great thing to take to, say, if you have to drag your kid to your yoga class, stick them in the corner and work on this book. I think that it's going to have a lot of applications and people will be really excited about it.
I hope so. I think it starts out as a story. So that's always just a good way to kind of get into the exercises that are at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is there a short passage of the story that you would like to share with our listeners?
Sure. I can do that. I think I'll just start with the very beginning to give you kind of an introduction to the tone of this thing.
Okay.
So I'm going to paint a picture for anyone listening. Imagine this is all written in a very handwritten-y font, as though you just like found this journal on the, not on the side of the road, because you probably wouldn't want to pick that up, but you found this journal. And it's written just for you. So it starts out. Once upon a time in a land far, far away, there lived... No, wait, that's not right. Let me try it again. In a land far, far away, many, many years ago, there lived a young woman, though really she was so much more... Okay, now that's just getting wordy. Maybe I should start by introducing myself to you. After all, I'm the one writing this thing. And besides, I am you. Okay, let me explain. You might have heard of me before as the soul or higher power. Some people call me their consciousness or inner voice. Some people even call me God or the universe or energy or Allah or Brahman. But you don't need to call me anything like that. You can just call me your highness. No, I'm just messing with you. You can call me Is or Is because I'm your inner self. So if I'm this all-powerful energy, why am I bothering to write to you in this dinky journal? Why all the pictures? Why the ill-attempted intro to telling my story? Hello, I am you. No, let's put it this way. I am you with a capital Y, and so you better listen up. First, let's get acquainted really quick, and then I'll promise to move on to that story I started with in the beginning. And I promise I'll get the intro down right this time. All right, getting to know each other. Now, I know you can't really close your eyes while you're reading, but read this paragraph and then close your eyes. Duh. Okay, so you'll close your eyes. Breathe in and out slowly through your nose and pay attention to that. No, not your nose, your breath. Focus on the breath entering your nose, filling up your lungs, and the movement of your chest and your stomach. Then on the exhale, do the same. Maybe you pause in between, maybe you don't. However you're breathing, don't try to control it or think about it or judge it. Just watch it. After a few minutes, your breath will start to slow down naturally. Just keep watching it. Gradually shift your attention to the beating of your heart. Move your attention to your fingertips and feel your heart beating there. Feel the energy. Feel the life. That's your inner self. Nice to meet you.
That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Really, yeah, really great. Talk a little bit about the exercises that you have in the back of the book for kids.
So these exercises are, they were kind of inspired by some of the books that I've read as an adult that have similar exercises, but they're just much more digestible and fun. Mm-hmm. there's some guided meditation exercises. I have several pages that are just meant for journaling and kind of even some scribble pages, which are just like, I have some scribble pages following a dealing with negativity and anger exercise that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really just kind of like an energetic, you know, put it down, get it out. And I find that that's super helpful for me. And I did that a lot as a kid. I've always drawn, and I know that when I was feeling anxious or angry or upset, drawing like with just big scribbly type energetic movements was really helpful for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have some exercises to deal with people that maybe kids are finding themselves judging or being judged by.
Mm-hmm.
There's a music exercise. There's a draw your inner self exercise, which is fun. That was actually inspired by a teacher that I had in Bali. And he had us draw our inner selves as islands.
Mm-hmm.
And just like fill the land in with everything that would, you know, be in our little island country. And when I was doing that, I thought how cool that would be for kids.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Yeah. And then one of the ones that caught my eye was this one about listing qualities. Think of a person that you like a lot and list the qualities that you like about them. And then think about somebody who gets on your nerves, or the words you use is person you like less, which is nice.
right.
And the, you know, and then having the kids reflect on how they themselves embody those qualities of both the things that they like and that they don't like, then that's super useful for, you know, as they enter this age where all of a sudden there's so much judgment on them, on their peers, on themselves. It's really good to be able to have for them to have techniques to be able to step away from all that judgment and you know, make some space for higher awareness to come in. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. How do you think that your own life would have been different if you had had a tool like this as a kid?
Oh man. Let me count the ways. everything would have been different. Like on the one hand, I'm grateful that things have gone the way they've gone because now I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder where I would be, I guess, if I had a meditation practice or just even knew anything about mindfulness or spirituality of any kind at all when I was young. I grew up in a house that we weren't religious at all. In fact, probably kind of the opposite. God and like anything other than what was, you know, happening just immediately and, mm-hmm. You know, detectably was not really something that I ever thought about or mm-hmm. even knew people really thought about.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, on the one hand, I'm grateful that it's weird because it's like, I'm grateful that I didn't, and I did go through a bunch of early on stuff. You know, like all people do, I've had lots of, I think probably like most people that find themselves on a mindfulness or spiritual path later in life,
mm-hmm.
they're coming from a place of having struggled a lot early on. And kind of what's driven them to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm grateful to have been driven to that. And I don't think had I gone or been introduced to a mindfulness practice early on, I would have gone through that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that my own practices have very much confirmed for me, especially ayahuasca, is the teaching in Christianity of redemptive suffering, that there's almost a requirement for spiritual growth to include suffering. And there's also that quality that if you are in an elevated place, that suffering doesn't go away, but that you are able to, say, dedicate your suffering to the redemption of other people. And that, you know, what if we divorce it from this Christian concept of like suffering and uh-huh. you know, redemption, but if you think of it in terms of, say, karma, or just, you know, you can be a more effective human being in the world if you are somewhat detached from your emotions. And it allows you to be a better human being for other people around you. And when you understand your emotions better, you're a better friend. And it's easier for you to comfort people who are suffering when you have that space to not get sucked into your own emotions. And so I definitely agree with what you're saying regarding that the past suffering can have a really profoundly positive effect on spiritual development.
Mm-hmm.
In your other works of fiction, have you illustrated your own book before?
The other things that I've done have been a bit older than this.
Okay.
So they're young adult, but a little bit older young adult. Mm-hmm. So I've illustrated the covers of the books and then haven't had illustrations in the text before. So this will be the first where I've illustrated the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
I have illustrated a friend's book who's also an author, which is kind of making its rounds right now with publishers.
Mm-hmm. If a young person was interested in getting into becoming a professional writer, what advice would you give them?
Ooh, keep doing it. And rejection will happen. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, if you love it, do it. If you find that it's because you're good at it and you don't love it, then don't waste your time. Mm-hmm. I feel like writing for me, it's an interesting thing. I have an interesting relationship with writing where it's really hard for me to start a project.
Mm-hmm.
But once I do, it's almost a meditation in itself. I get really into this zone and I feel healthier, happier, more energetic. Like everything's just, I'm kind of in the flow.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so for me, I love it when I'm into it. And when I'm not into it, I kind of take breaks and work on other things. Mm-hmm. It's just, I think about listening to what feels good and right for you. And, don't do it if you think that you want to do it to be rich and famous, because
there aren't very many people that get that far.
Right. And maybe you will be rich and famous, but you shouldn't do anything for that reason. Like if it feels good and you love it, then that's the reason you should be doing it.
Yeah, that's great. What do you think are, so first of all, you're kind of like a young millennial. Is that correct? Like in your 20s, I would guess?
I am 29.
29. Yes. Okay. So how would you characterize the struggles of young people, the target audience of your book? How do you think that their lives are different or more challenging than, say, the way things were when you were 10 years old?
Oh, I think social media and the internet is a huge thing. Because when I was 10, I think that the internet was just starting to be a thing at homes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's probably about when AOL was coming around. And mm-hmm.
I think that I got my first internet connection at home in maybe 1996, 1995, something like that.
Yeah, so that would be right around that same time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm just, even in teaching kids, my kids that I teach are roughly 5 to 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they have cell phones and they have like, I don't know what their social media is. It's not Facebook, but they use something else. And they're just, they're so in it and they don't know anything else. They don't know a time before all of this.
Right.
So I think that's so different than what I grew up with in my generation and generations before me.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree.
Yeah. And it makes a huge difference in being present. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at a screen all the time, you're not present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that I find when I get mindful about my Facebook addiction, mm-hmm. is that there is this really strange quality to it where it draws you into seeking outside validation, like constantly, right? Like I'm going to say one thing and then I have to keep looking back again and again to see if people liked it. Or it takes you out of the moment in the sense of even when you're having an experience, even if you're not like snapping pictures all the time while you're doing stuff, there's a aspect in the back of your mind going like, oh, I'm going to tell people about on Facebook about this.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. I actually got rid of Facebook for a while recently.
Uh-huh.
Because I found that I was becoming more and more reliant on it was almost valuing myself depending on whether or not people liked something or responded to something in a way that I wanted them to.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to have that kind of relationship with myself. And mm-hmm. so I got rid of it and it was really liberating, but I missed out on everything.
Like all the
events are on Facebook. So I was just really out of the loop and
right.
That's what eventually got me back on it.
Yeah. You know, and for creative people, one of the things I notice about Facebook as well is that it steals my creative energy in the sense that I spend time, say, thinking about a conversation that I'm having on some thread. And, mm-hmm. you know, if I had just had a face-to-face conversation with this person about whatever it was we're talking about, you know, in the end of that, I might be like really inspired to say, write an article about the issue or, you know, dig deeper and see what other things are going on with that. But when you do it on Facebook, you're like, oh, I'm writing right now. And mm-hmm. so, and you know, you're just sort of like giving away your intellectual property to Mark Zuckerberg or whatever.
It's all his fault.
Yeah. Do you find that to be the case?
I do. I think it's an energy drain and there is something there where it's like, I'm writing this post. It's really beautiful and creative. And then you're like, but I don't have to write anything else for the day. I'm good. And it's almost something like if it appears as though you're working on things to other people, that satisfies something in you that's like, I don't actually have to work on this thing. If it looks like I'm working on this thing and people think I'm being very creative and, you know, lead this life.
Uh-huh.
It's just, it's a weird, weird marketing yourself, selling an image of yourself to
right.
people thing.
Right. Like lots of times when I see people that have like lots of photographs of themselves exercising, I'm like, who took that photo?
Right. I wonder that often. It's like someone on a solitary vacation posing in front of a thing. I'm like, who's taking these pictures?
Oh, that's funny. And how do you, so we talked about the differences. What universal problems or universal struggles do you think that kids in the target age of your book have?
Yeah, I think that the being cool thing is not new, and I don't think it'll ever go away. I think just right around the time, 4th to 7th grade, especially right around when puberty kicks in and everything goes insane.
Mm-hmm.
Being cool is just another way of, like, if you're really listening to what is speaking there, it's like, do you see me? Am I important? Am I valued?
Mm-hmm.
And so kids kind of latch onto this idea of, like, being popular, being cool. And it's really just a cry for, like, please see me. I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a thing. That's a thing for adults. That doesn't really go away.
No, you're right. It doesn't. Yeah. I mean, the Facebook exists because of that, right?
Yes. That's why we're all posting pictures of our meals.
Yeah, exactly. On your Kickstarter page, you said that you're projecting to have your work done with your book sometime in December, potentially of this year. Mm-hmm. What if this book were to launch and be as popular as you would want it to be? What would you see your next year to 3 years looking like?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the dream is that this book gets into as many kids' hands as it possibly can. Mm-hmm. And I think that my next 3 years would look very similar to what they look like right now. Because I'm doing what I really like to do, which is working with kids and writing. And when I'm not writing, allowing myself to just not write and kind of hang out. I'm in Austin. It's really hot here right now. So mm-hmm. I would probably get out of town, do some traveling and keep writing from wherever I go.
Mm-hmm.
I like to keep things pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it would be very cool if this book could get into a lot of people's hands, and I could imagine myself going to schools and, you know, teaching kids some meditation techniques and mm-hmm. sharing this book with them and doing some art projects and stuff. It'd be awesome.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll hold that in the light for you. That'd be great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Indeed. And, so we will do everything that we can. And how long is your, is the fundraiser going on?
It will be going on until August 19th.
August 19th. Okay. And as of where you're less than 24 hours into the Kickstarter, how far along are you so far?
Let's check right now. I am less than 24 hours in, and I've got over $1,400. So not too bad.
Nice. Yeah. More than, that's like almost 15% of your goal already. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. And what's your next project after this, do you think?
Well, I'm kind of in the middle of a book. I haven't actually been working on it because I've been pretty focused on this Kickstarter mm-hmm. and a couple of other projects. But I have a series called the Peter Abel series, and the first one is currently out. The second one is hopefully coming out this year. It's already done. So I'm kind of about halfway through the third book. So I'll be finishing that up this year.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And have you found that because of things like the Twilight and the Hunger Games and then the Divergent series, how has that changed being a young adult author? Do you think it's changed the way that people feel about your career choice or about the way that you think about these things while you're writing them or anything like that?
That's a good question, because honestly, when I'm writing something, I never think about the reader except for when I'm actually writing to the reader. I mm-hmm. don't think about it in terms of marketing is what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever write something with the intention of, oh, is this going to sell? Like
mm-hmm.
I write it because it's something that I really enjoy, and it just kind of comes through me almost.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never written a book that was your typical young adult, like vampires and love triangles or werewolves and love triangles or future world and love triangles. So I'm the worst person to ask about like marketable young adults. Everything I've done is kind of, I'm a weird person. So most of the stuff that I write has some kind of weird spin.
How so? Like, give me an example.
Okay. So the Peter Abel series is young adult and it takes place in the world of fiction. So it's about a young man named Peter who is an ex-boy wizard.
Uh-huh.
So like when he was written about in his literary life, he was a boy wizard and now his author stopped writing his series. And so he's a boy wizard, but he's like, why is there this term? I'm almost 20 years old, you know, like, and so he goes to like Wizards Anonymous meetings and, there's a lot of crossover between his story and other fiction. So you'll see familiar characters from other literature because he lives in fiction.
So it's sort of like, it's like that strikes me as very similar to like, it's like the book version of like Wreck-It Ralph, where after the arcades shut down, all the characters interact with one another. And
yeah, a friend of mine who reviewed it actually likened it to Toy Story. Like what happens when we're not reading the books, like mm-hmm. what are our characters doing? And that's kind of what it's about.
Very interesting. That's cool. Yeah. And it points to that, it points to the same kind of like reflective self-awareness that would inspire, say, a book like the one that you're promoting right now.
Yeah, it's funny. There's actually quite a lot of it gets pretty, I guess meta is the word, mm-hmm. or it just it does play with this kind of inner self even in the Peter Abel series, because it's kind of this question of like, well, who's writing this book? And Peter has to grapple with like, am I telling the story? Is someone else telling the story? And it brings up this whole like, what is destiny? What is God? And you know,
interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow. I like that. So, as we are heading into the end of our conversation, is there anything specific that you would like to leave our listeners with? Maybe we can tell them where to find out more about you, where to find out more about your Kickstarter campaign, and how they can help.
Yeah, sure. I would love your help. If you can hear this, I am talking to you. I would love your help. This is a book that I am most excited about. And in order to get it out the way that I really want to, I do need help. And if that means pledging, that's great. If that means just sharing this information with parents or educators or whoever you think might be interested in it, that's awesome too. You can find out more at justcallmeis.com. That'll link you directly to the Kickstarter page. And you can find out more about me on my author profile on Amazon. You can just go to Amazon and type in Natalie Grayson or The Fantastic Fable of Peter Abel, or just Peter Abel, and things will come up.
Cool. And we will include in the program notes links to all of those places so that people can find out more about you.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. And we definitely want to thank our good friend, Dr. Neil Goldsmith, for connecting us to you and to this project. Thank you so much, Neil. This is a really cool project, and I'm very happy that we're getting to be involved in helping promote it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, Natalie, thank you so much for being on Psychedelic Parenting, and we will stay in touch and help you hit your goal.
I so appreciate it. I think this is awesome. I think what you guys are doing is awesome. And I'm really glad that your son enjoyed it so much.
Right on. Well, I just see this as just one more tool in the tool chest that we're developing as we re-engineer our culture, because there's a lot of things out there that make it difficult to raise aware and awake children. And every time I see something like this that is obviously a useful tool written by somebody who cares about making a new culture that gets beyond all of this materialism and narcissism and everything that we have that we're sort of baking into our children these days, I deeply appreciate the efforts that you're putting forward to create these tools for parents. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye.